It's Not About Love. It's a new cabaret show by Megan Reardon, writer, singer and actor. It opens next week during the Dublin Fringe Festival. And the title is a direct quotation from something Megan said 7 years ago during an audition for the part of Juliet in Shakespeare's famous tragedy. She got the part and she's with me in studio now. So what did you say? It's not about love, I guess.
Yeah, basically.
Straight to the director.
Absolutely. I said, you know, this. It's obviously in our mentality as like one of the greatest love stories. You know, you say like Romeo and Juliet, Tristan and Isolde, Abelard and Eloise and all of that. And I go, yeah, no, look at it. Like it's about teenagers and everyone dies over 3 days and there's loads of suicides. And but it's not just about that. It's not just about looking at the realities of what the plot says happens. It's about the only way I felt like as an actor to come into this and have it make sense to play this part of a girl who's 13 is that it can't be about love the way that we think of it. And you know, we say love as well, and that means an infinite number of things, you know. So I thought it's not about love. It has to be about something else, some other kind of force that is so massive and moving through her and pulling her into this action. But because it's so big, we do call it love because we just think that love is supposed to be the most
encompasses everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so as you did get the part,
I did. Yeah.
It wasn't Aoife Spillane-Hinks who was directing on the day, was it? No.
No.
What would your reaction be, Aoife, to an actor who would say this is not about love? It's quite a provocative statement to say about Romeo and Juliet, really, isn't it?
I suppose I would be intrigued and excited because I love when an actor comes into an audition and isn't just looking to please, is looking to have a conversation, you know?
So clearly
it worked. Yeah.
It worked on the day. So it was in some ways, I presume that rehearsal process and playing the part must have started you thinking about specifically that the play Romeo and Juliet in a very really non-knowledgeable way, because when you play a play, when you play a part like that for a period of time, you really get to know the play intimately.
Yes, I mean, on so many levels. I mean, there's just the language level of really looking at what Shakespeare did and going, oh yeah, that's why he's a genius and that's why we still do his work, just in terms of the pure craft of it. But in going into it as well, it was a very different experience than just watching it. I mean, my generation has the archetypal, like seared into our brain, Baz Luhrmann vision. And that had so many like specific feelings and emotions and nostalgia attached to it. But then you get into the inside of it and look at what it means to say those words and explore like, okay, so if it is this force, if it is something else that's moving through her, well, how do I portray that? And then in my particular experience, which I talk about in It's Not About Love, in opening myself up to that perspective, I started to have very strange experiences that felt like they were bigger than myself. And I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't know if it was because of the play or I didn't know if it was because of the guy playing Romeo. I mean, it was really mysterious.
Yeah, you say something at one point in the play, I think, that any Juliets that you spoke to, presumably actors you know that played the part of Juliet, in 99% of cases, they fell for their Romeo.
They did.
And presumably the Romeo fell for his Juliet as well.
One hopes so. But yeah, I think it's that thing of, you know, love is... to quote the song, love is a verb, love is a doing word. And it's not just a feeling, it is an action. And there is something just on like a neurological level of if you choose to look at somebody with love and say loving things, you know, something might actually happen from that. So there could have been just kind of that level, but then it also just made me go like, what sorcery is this, Shakespeare? Like what did he create? Like the words kind of felt like a spell, you know,
right.
Like something, just something beyond.
They had a power beyond their meaning.
But yeah, precisely. And the fact, you know, there's so many questions about what that could be in ways that we don't even get the time to explore in our show of, you know, the collective unconscious, you know, because it's in the air so much, because we grow up knowing it, it just, is it a force on us because we've just grown up learning it before we even really know what it means.
Yeah, that it's inside us, but without us knowing that it's gone in.
Yeah.
One of the things I was saying to the both of you, Aoife, before we started was I'm intrigued by the setting here, which is obviously part of what your involvement as director. So explain the nature of the setting, where we are, what type of space we're in.
Well, the Chocolate Factory is an unconventional theatre space, although it has been used more and more often for theatre performances and performances in the fringe. But because this is a cabaret piece or a cabaret slash play, we're able to create that sense of openness, of people sitting at tables in their chairs. So there's a sense of informality, there's an open bar, there's a sense of this is your evening's entertainment that's a bit more than sitting rigidly in a theatre space, but it's actually something that you can participate in without being forced to participate.
Yeah, you're not going to be asked to stand up and sing this song with me, please.
And I don't do crowd work like comedians. No. Like it's not that kind of show.
But if the tables are out like that, you know, in the setting and in the working out of the blocking and where Megan might be in it, have you got very specific moments when things are addressed to people at tables, or what way is that happening?
Yeah, there are specific moments. It's actually something that we've talked about a bit with this show, is how much do you bring the audience participation in? How much do you try to get them to be part of the party? Which, you know, if you've ever read or seen Romeo and Juliet, you know there's a big party in it. So, and there's a party in this.
The mass ball is one of the most important things.
That's the moment they fall in love, one might propose. It's relatively limited in what we're asking the audience to take part in, because there's so many moving parts on stage that there's enough to watch there.
Well, you recorded a little bit for us, or you sent a clip into us earlier on Temptation Waits. This is the garbage track, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe give us a context for where this comes in the show, Megan, and then we'll listen.
Yes, so it is this party that we're talking about. We have the original version that plays, that's, you know, very rocky and very poppy and kind of electro-y. And then we kind of drop into something a little bit more ethereal that is, it's for the moment that Romeo and Juliet first see each other.
Let's have a listen. Section there from Megan Reardon's realisation of the garbage track Temptation Waits, and this is from her show It's Not About Love, which is an examination of Romeo and Juliet is what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
We should mention the two musicians that we heard there.
Yes, very much. Kim Porcelli is on the cello and Sarah Kinlan is playing the auto harp.
So Kim and Sarah are the musicians, Aoife, and are they part of the action, or are they up at the back? Do they stay put where they are anywhere on the stage?
they don't always stay put.
Yeah, you let them wander around down into the audience at certain points.
Bit. Now, you know, we've actually had an ongoing conversation about exactly what the relationship is between Megan and the musicians. And I mean, the bottom line is Megan has come here in the structures of the play to have a bit of a summoning of some spirits. So she's brought her two friends along, her two comrades, to do it with her because she needs them.
Yeah, again, and those spirits that are summoned in lots of ways, and this is, in fact, one of the parts of the show that I find quite brave, that you can do this. You summon up, there's quite a large autobiographical element to it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
There are old boyfriends and partners summoned up, some happily and some not so happily, it has to be said.
Yeah, that's... This is my third autobiographical show, and it is, I think, the least fictionalized. And I don't know, I think there's just something about the subject material that just makes me want to be completely honest about it and to have my experience be useful. And I don't want to spoil too much about anything that comes later, but I definitely, I want to share that. Now, I will say that anybody, I mean, in my own defense, any of the individuals who might see this show have been given code names. So I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus.
Will the individuals recognize themselves, do you think?
Yes.
no question.
No, any one of them who's going to see it, I did give them a heads
warning.
Up. Yes.
Right. Here's what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Is there any significance in the fact that the Chocolate Factory is also a venue often used for weddings, I'm told, and for wedding parties?
That's very interesting. I think those spirits will be there as well.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope we don't jinx the place.
So what stage are you at now in rehearsals? You must be nearly there, right?
We're nearly there. Yes, our first preview is a week from tomorrow. And we open the day after on Wednesday the 18th. And then we run through Sunday the 22nd.
Okay. And the show is called It's Not About Love. At the Chocolate Factory, where you can also hold your wedding, if you so wish, seemingly. Dublin, at Chocolate Factory in Dublin, 17th through until the 22nd of September as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. And you'll find out full details on fringefest.com.